Greetings and welcome to a Fireside Chat. This is your host, Lance White. Today we have a very special guest. Dr. John J. Harper is a clinical hypnotherapist, futurist, medical research scientist, and writer with the nonprofit corporation American Delphi Academy. He is an international speaker on worldwide changes in climate, culture, and consciousness. A frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM, I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Harper to our show. Hello, Dr. Harper.
Hello, Lance. Great to be with you and your audience.
Good. I'm really excited about your new book. It's called Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. And I thought it might be interesting for the audience to hear how that book began. What were the seeds for that book?
Yeah, it was quite dramatic, actually, and totally unexpected. As you mentioned briefly, my background is in the scientific community, specifically with the Department of Defense.
Uh-huh.
Spent about 25 years in electronics and related with missile technology. And during the course of that career, I had a very good friend of mine from Plaquemine, Louisiana, in fact. His name was George Vigay. He was a brilliant mathematician and physicist.
Mm-hmm.
He died suddenly one Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. In his doctor's office, in fact, in Huntsville, Alabama, of a massive cardiac arrest. And he was my dearest friend for about 17 years. He and I had served in the U.S. Army together, both in the United States and in Europe, in missilery, and then came back and completed our degrees in the sciences and then went on to work for the Department of Defense. Well, this Monday morning, which was happened to be in November of 1987, George died suddenly, and of course, we were all went into shock. Everyone that knew him, his immediate family, two daughters, my wife, Connie, and I had known both of them since late 1960s, actually,
mm-hmm.
and this, again, was in November of 87 when he died. Well, I attended his funeral, in fact, was a pallbearer, and had a very elaborate Catholic ritual funeral, and literally lifted that casket up into this marble mausoleum there in Huntsville, Alabama Cemetery.
Uh-huh.
Well, to kind of fast forward, I went into a real strong grief process and decided to return to my native Seattle, Washington area and put in for a government transfer and transferred from the Army Missile Command to the Naval Undersea Warfare Center in Keyport, Washington, hoping to get over my grief and just start my life anew and kind of revisit my childhood experiences there in the Northwest and introduce my wife and family to this great part of the country. Well, that was not to be the case. For in June of 1988, about 7 months after he died, one morning as I began to awake from what I thought was a lucid dream of my friend George.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him standing there at the foot of my bed, and as I shook myself awake, this vision, which is highly energetic and very beautiful, didn't go away. In fact, it intensified, began to shimmer in front of me,
wow.
And it looked as if it was a hologram. You know, I didn't even know that term back then, but now, you know, with hindsight being 2020 and
right.
My insight being perhaps even greater now.
Yeah.
Well, I realized that the classical third eye opening experience had happened to me spontaneously. And so I was looking, as I would say, into another dimensional space that was interrelated with our own. And what happened then was George looked at me and smiled, and an instant telepathic channel opened up inside my mind. So I was presented with this profound metaphysical experience, and here I was, holding basically a top secret security clearance, and perhaps losing my mind at the same time. So, my future didn't look too bright to continue in my line of work if I go around speaking about seeing the dead people. You know,
right.
So, of course, now there's been a few years, and I can smile and laugh at myself now, but this is a very traumatic experience for me. It was unexpected,
uh-huh.
and it did not fit into my paradigm. My
right.
model of reality was Lockhart science and didn't have any room for the spiritual, not in this way anyway. So that's, in a real quick synopsis, that That's how I began the process of looking into trance phenomenon. I knew that shamans had made claims like this in the literature. I was well read in psychology at that time, and especially, you know, neurology and that type of thing. I was very interested in how the mind worked. And, so I began a very lengthy process of looking at the literature, and over a several year period, I started scribbling notes that turned into a book manuscript, and that's what we have today with Transformer Shamans of the 21st Century, a document that I've worked with for probably about 15 years and polished, and you know, it is an amazing document, if I say so myself, because I don't know any other out there that integrates all this knowledge in a way that's friendly to the average person. You know, it's locked into science journals, and then they don't even talk about it in the way that I'm talking to our audience here today.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one thing about your book is that, I mean, you're covering the Mayan prophecies, 2012, DNA activation, Egyptian lore, and the earth changes. And, I mean, it's amazing because it's got everything. It's got the essence of what's really the cutting edge of all the different fields which are merging into a spiritual element. So I'm really excited about your book. I know that people will be wondering about the Mayan prophecies in 2012. That's a big concern for a lot of people. What is your take on that?
Well, you know, back in those early years of research, I bumped into some things by Terence McKenna. And since him and his brother Dennis, you know, were very prolific in spreading the word of this time wave zero concept, which just happened, they discovered later, to coincide with the end date of the Mayan calendar, December 21st, 2012.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, that didn't mean a whole lot to me. I thought that was quite interesting speculation, but I noticed that it was a very scientific approach to consciousness, to body, mind, spirit transformation events in people's lives. And so I started looking at that over a period of years, and what I started discovering, Lance, was that it tends to all come back to this idea that there's going to be an apocalyptic, which the word, by the way, means revealing or unveiling.
Mm-hmm.
We hear it used so often today, and what people are really trying to talk about is the Battle of Armageddon,
right,
not apocalypse, okay?
Right.
Apocalypse just means to unveil. Well, the question then is, unveil what?
Yes.
So, once I realized that the experience I had when I saw my deceased friend George was a kundalini,
yeah,
type experience,
yeah,
where the pineal pituitary gland working in synchronization in some way opened my inner eye to,
yeah,
an outer vision, or as I say, I went into you know, the outer reaches of inner space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when I saw that this was a possibility for the human being to experience, this multidimensional telepathic communication,
mm-hmm,
vision,
mm-hmm,
I realized that perhaps this is what all the ancients were talking about in terms of things like the rapture or the end time,
right,
or the apocalypse.
Right.
They were unveiling the idea that at some point there would be a collective mind that would open to us here on this planet and give us access to what we've called the Akashic Records.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened to me, too, because in September, mm-hmm, of 1990, so a couple years after I had this experience with my friend, I was studying very intensely one night. I put in a full day at the military base where I worked as an engineer. And when I came home, I spent, you know, was burning the midnight oil,
mm-hmm,
and I was very intensely focused in my mind about what was going to happen to this planet. I was concerned about nuclear weapons. I was,
mm-hmm,
concerned about pollution and the environment. And suddenly, again, spontaneously, my third eye opened again.
Wow.
I was connected telepathically to what I would call Mind at Large or the Akashic Records.
Huh.
And what specifically happened to me, Lance, was that I immediately started asking questions in my mind,
uh-huh,
and immediately I received answers. I mean, I was asking scientific questions, I was asking religious questions, and instantaneous knowing. It was, I no longer had thoughts. These thoughts were thinking me, as I put it.
Right, right.
And so in my book, I go through all these experiences. Now, I like to throw one little caveat in here. After all of this started gelling in my mind, I started writing about it and speaking a little bit about it publicly, I realized that I had an experience when I was about 8 years old that I had never integrated and never even thought back on until this time later in my life. And what happened to me, I was sitting in my classroom in Pacific City, Washington, which is at the base of Mount Rainier.
Oh, yeah.
And I was glancing on this beautiful spring day out at this mountain, this gorgeous ice cream cone, as I used to think of it then. And again, a spontaneous thought came into my mind, and the thought was, what am I doing here again?
Ah.
Now, here I was in a farm community in a really non-religious environment, just hard-working, good people, honest kind of folk, but nothing, you know, that would trigger any type of reflection at that age anyway,
right,
about reincarnation, for example.
Right.
Well, again, as soon as I had that thought, what am I doing here again, a voice spoke to me, a clear, crystal clear, soft, velvety voice that was not my own, said, John, if not you, then someone else.
Oh, my.
End of sentence.
Wow.
And it throttled me.
Wow.
It crushed my little budding ego so bad at that point.
Wow.
I thought, gosh, you know, I'm special. And then all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, pal. That voice said, if not you, then someone else, meaning
wow,
this was a gift to be here on this planet.
Wow.
So anyway, I had that as a child, and then I immediately blocked it out of my mind until I was in my late 30s and started having these other experiences.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I wanted to, you know, kind of wrap all that up to give it a gestalt, a whole picture of kind of about 40 years of my life to that time.
Wow, that's amazing. Yes, I'm familiar with Terrence McKenna's work, and he and other researchers are touting the wisdom of shamans from indigenous cultures. And I've heard a few people speak recently about experiences with DMT and ayahuasca. Is it possible to cultivate shamanism in our, quote, modern, unquote, society today, or do people need to go back to the ancient ways and actually be with ancient cultures?
I think what we're talking about here, Lance, is a two-pronged approach. Both have benefits. Both are dangerous. I don't want to belittle or minimize the impact that this third eye opening experience has had on me, because it's turned my world upside down and inside out. And it's only now, after some, say, 15 plus years, that I'm really firmly grounded with this knowledge and can access this type of level of mind without bringing on a panic attack. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I can only imagine that people have had these, have rushed immediately into the emergency room. They were immediately put on either a tranquilizer or an antipsychotic medication, diagnosed either as bipolar, schizophrenic, or worse.
Oh, yeah.
And then that medicine worked. It literally took that experience from them. They felt relieved. The medical community felt relieved that they had done their job, without ever realizing that the ancient said, if you let that experience go without damping it down, it will integrate itself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I had one, I had a Kundalini experience myself, so I can validate everything you're saying. And I won't go into my details because, you know, it's not important, but I did end up spending 7 days in the psych ward, and it's exactly what you said. You know, it diminishes the experience, and a neighbor also had gone through something similar, and she thought she was God, and she was sitting in a police parking lot, and she was changing the world from there. So she ended up in a psych ward.
Yes, I've dealt with clients like this. I'm very familiar with the set of symptoms you're discussing, and I understand completely that you need to get these folks a lot of support, a lot of love, a lot of hugs.
Absolutely.
And also get them their diet stabilized again.
And they're not crazy.
And they're not crazy.
Yeah.
What they're doing, they're prematurely experiencing what's going to be a collective third eye open experience in era 2012. And let's get back to your question about DMT.
Yes, yes.
DMT, dimethyltryptamine, is an endogenous substance. That endogenous means made in the body. It's not only made in the brain, it's made in the pineal gland specifically, also in the lungs and also in the blood.
Huh.
Now, listen to this. The pineal gland is not, it's a switch that turns off DMT.
Oh, really?
Pituitary, the growth hormone, actually uses that, turns that on for growth cycles. Now, here's the thing. If the pineal gland did not turn that off, you would have a rush of DMT and your third eye would open.
Huh.
So the pineal is the switch, we believe.
Wow.
And this is good research based on a psychiatrist, Dr. Rick Strassman, who I share in my book, his work on DMT, and he even calls DMT the spirit molecule now.
Yeah.
He's also speculated recently and agrees, I would assume, with my position on this, that we are headed to a collective third eye open experience that's been known as the rapture, or in McKenna speak, it would be the eschaton.
Huh.
It would be the end time eschatology supreme, if you will. This would be the magnum opus, and that would be the opening of the third eye pineal pituitary switches.
Wow.
And what are we all speculating, those of us in this little inner circle that are, you know, scratching each other's brains trying
right.
to tease out these answers?
Right.
We're all coming to an idea that 2012 is about a solar flare, a coronal mass ejection, CME, off the sun, that's probably triggered by a galactic alignment that the Mayans and the Egyptians and other cultures knew.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, I'm firmly convinced now, and I say so in my book through 350 pages, that the sacred site structures themselves were tracking the precession of the equinoxes, the 26,000-year cycle of the Earth, upon its axis, because the actual tilt of the Earth changes, the so-called pole shift that everyone's worried about in some circles. I don't believe it's going to be a geophysical per se shift. There's not going to be no turning of the Earth upside down, in other words. What we're talking about is a slight tilt correction, and that, however, will be brought about by very massive changes in the center of gravity at the core of the Earth.
Huh.
I think the myths talk about this, and here's the idea about DMT. I think when you shift through this massive solar flare input of energy to the core of the Earth, and I think we had the first bout of that, by the way, in December 2004 with the Indonesia quake and tsunami. NASA said that shifted gravity ever so slightly.
Huh.
That's just a little stutter step to what's coming, in my opinion.
Wow.
But here's the good news.
Okay.
Okay. If we can collectively understand this and support one another in this and, you know, pat each other on the third eye more often.
Right.
We can get through this. But that's what all the religious stuff is trying to tell us, this thing about loosening the ego, about don't have such a rigid belief system about everything. Hey, you know, lighten up, because you're going to get enlightened here pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that is going to be tie into this ayahuasca, the psilocybin, the sacred mushroom, the DMT, all that, all those hallucinogens are trying to basically say, hey, you are part of the Earth, and your body is the Earth body, right? You know, this old Chief Seattle idea, you know, that this is the voice of the Earth speaking to you now, okay? And I'm listening to your voice, and I know that you are the Earth speaking to me now.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Well, we need to take this more literally, because we feel strongly that, for those of us who have this experience, that what we're tapping is this electromagnetic field that goes from the north and the south poles, okay, and it really regulates everything. Magnetism is the magic of all the changes, by the way. If you understand magnetism as consciousness itself, that's a huge, huge step forward, in my opinion.
Wow. I really wasn't aware of that. I mean, I assumed that consciousness was everywhere, that we're in a field of consciousness, but I hadn't actually made that connection.
Well, when you realize that what we are is basically an electrogyroscope, if you will. I mean, the Earth, for example, the Earth is got a north and a south pole. It's spinning around about 1,000 miles an hour around its axis. It's tilted about 23.5 degrees off true geologic center.
Yeah.
Okay, well, our left and right brain hemisphere is also an electromagnet. We have magnetite in our brains.
Uh-huh.
We have iron filings in our blood.
Huh.
We're a wet cell battery. The majority of us was just electrified water.
Huh.
Right?
Yeah.
We're a wet cell electronic magnet gyroscope, if you will. And we're constantly trying to get our bearings. We're trying to navigate like the birds and everything do by sensing magnetic fields. Well, when you don't sense this, then you stumble blindly through life.
Mm-hmm. Out of balance.
You're out of balance.
Yeah.
Right. And when you're skewed to the left brain or the right brain, you're a lame brain.
That's a good one.
But when you have whole brain thinking
and
sensing
and
your sixth sight and your sixth sense is tied to your other five senses, you stand upright and speak for rightly because now you're seeing clearly and organically and wholly as a global human being.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything you're saying is making perfect sense to me, but what about all those people that are wrapped up in their daily lives and they're going to their jobs and they're struggling and they don't even have time to think about things and they're busy trying to hang on to their homes and their food and their jobs and so on. Do you think that that's just going to kind of, it's going to make things difficult for those people if the energies are changing, will it not?
Yes, absolutely. And this is why I'm certain that, you know, I don't take anything that I'm about personally. I realize that I'm being used as a tool of the greater consciousness.
Yes.
And as you know that well, and I know folks in your inner circle will relate to that idea too, that we're all in this together.
Yes.
And so we need to look at each other as part of the solution
and
not the problem. In other words, we need cooperation now, not competitiveness.
Yes.
And so, yes, we have to feed the body. Yes, we have to find some task that pays us enough to sustain our well-being. But if we're out here focused on all the stuff and we're losing the opportunity to discuss these types of things and integrate them into our consciousness, then we're going to be very surprised one day when folks become very telepathic and all a person say that's not tuned into this has is symptoms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a great crisis in consciousness, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be the biggest crisis. We've got all kinds of things coming at us because the sun is changing its dynamics in this solar cycle 24. That's the formal title of this by astrophysicists.
Uh-huh.
And I think all the literature, the types of tensions that you sense in the society is this tremendous buildup of energy that's about to be released up through and into the third eye.
Yes, yes.
And people are afraid and they don't know why.
Yes.
They're running scared, but they don't know where to run to for safety.
Right.
And the thing is, stand your ground.
Yes.
Get your health in order. Get into a support group that understands this.
Absolutely.
And keep listening to the Lance White Show.
The main thing that I see is, that we need to not be afraid. And that's one of the things that really stops us dead in our tracks.
Yes.
You know, there's something that I want to tap into a little bit, and I don't want to digress because we're on a really good thread here. But, you know, what about... we're tampering with the ionosphere through weather manipulation and programs like HARP, and there's chemtrails and so on. Do you think that that has any impact, or is that so minuscule in the scheme of things that it'll just be wiped away?
Well, first of all, we live in a hologram, right? A whole message, and a hologram means that, you know, the parts in the whole and the whole's in a part.
Mm.
So absolutely everything we do impacts at some level everything.
Mm-hmm.
However, you got a good idea there. For example, I would go so far as even to see the war in Iraq, which is just a travesty.
Yes.
But we'll have, if we stick it out and if we pay the price, we created this trauma. We need to attend to it now as medics.
And
okay.
Heal it.
And I'm saying I'm a veteran myself,
yes.
Retired Department of Defense, and I've got a son-in-law on the front lines right now in Iraq.
Well, God bless him.
Yes. And so it's very emotional for me at times to say this. because he may give his life as 3,000 others have already given theirs.
Yeah.
But if you run from the situation, it will turn into total chaos and all good will go down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not here to preach the sermon for the Department of Defense or the Secretary of Defense or the President of the United States. That's not my role, of course. However, as someone who has some sixth sense about himself and looking at the world situation, we need to help in every way we can. And I would love to see one day our military turned into a peacekeeping force.
Oh, absolutely. I think we all would like that. And from what you said, we're going in that direction, whether we like it or not.
Yes, we're going kicking and screaming now.
Yeah.
What we need to do is go with third eye open vision.
Exactly, exactly.
And look at the end result and not the short-term pain.
Exactly.
The pain leads to gain.
Yes, I agree with you on that one. Do you think that we're getting any outside help from, star families, or some people refer to them as star nations, and a lot of people seem to believe that we're getting a lot of help from different advanced beings from other planetary systems. What do you think about that?
I think there's no doubt whatsoever.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
In fact, let me share a quick story from my own family.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Somewhere on the end of my book, I recall writing about an event that happened in the Olympic National Forest in Western Washington State. Back, this was in the mid-1990s. It happened to I have three adult children, and two daughters. My oldest daughter's in their mid-30s now. This happened when they were in their late teens, maybe early 20s, it seems. They had a camping group that was there in the Olympic National Forest over a 4th of July weekend, and they came back from that experience and came to me and said, Dad, we've got to talk about what's going on. They were obviously excited and very uncharacteristically disturbed by what they had experienced. And I said, all right, girls, let's go talk about this. And, Dad being a therapist himself and that type of person, So anyway, one of my daughters, Kimberly, asked me to conduct a hypnotic therapy session with her because I was licensed at that time. I was also working with the Navy Hospital Clinic there at Keyport, Washington, in some of these stress-related kind of disorders with military and civilian folks. But when I regressed Kimberly, she just opened up, and a voice, literally, very non-threatening, very chatty, started downloading information to me that was confirming everything that I'd been studying was of value, number one. That was quite an eye-opener. This was totally out of the blue. Then I asked some very pertinent questions of my daughter, who was deeply entranced at that point, about our future. And they told me around 2010 to 2012, there would be a tremendous increase in what we call alien encounters.
Wow.
So I
love
here,
this stuff.
Well, listen to this now. And I've just, really tried to hammer this home in my book that, of course, what are they waiting for? They're waiting for us for our third eye to open so we can see and interact with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as I say, this is not rocket science.
Right,
this
is
science of the soul.
Right, right. Absolutely. It's kind of like we haven't quite stepped up to the plate yet.
We can't even see the plate, man. We need an umpire to sweep the plate clean for us. And then they need to show us the bat and where the ball is at.
Well, thank goodness for people like you who are telling us that there's even a game in the first place.
the cosmic game is a very interesting one, because as you start integrating this knowledge, not only do you get cosmic giggles occasionally, you get the synchronicities, and you get to realize that everyone's kind of walking around in a fog because they can't see multidimensionally.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that people, that are in the awakening process see the same things.
Yeah.
We all seem to tap into the same field of knowledge and awareness, and the information is the same stuff.
Exactly.
You just seem to have a handle on, most aspects, if not all aspects of it, which I really enjoy. Quickly on the alien thing, I've been watching some shows recently, Dan Aykroyd had a thing on UFOs, and a lot of people feel that the abductions have to do with DNA and genetic manipulation. Do you, I know that's kind of a far out topic, but do you have any thoughts on that one?
My book is loaded with information along these lines. DNA, as I discovered from my experience with my deceased friend George, when I saw that morning in June of 1988, was a exact replica of my old friend, except his body had been transformed into what I would say was a liquid crystalline semiconductor type substance. In other words, it looked metallic. It was beautiful. I mean, it was just gorgeous. You remember the water creature in the movie The Abyss?
Yes.
That was it. That's what was looking at back at me that morning, only in the complete body and facial features. I mean, really detailed features of the body at the cellular level.
Wow.
And then it was filled with rainbow light. Can you imagine? Talk about just being overwhelmed by that vision, you know? And then to see your old friend, you know, still alive. Well, what I discovered, again, with hindsight and years of painstaking research, that DNA is a liquid crystal semiconductor. That is hard science now. There's literature, tons of literature on that. Mm. And I give all, maybe 100 or so references to all these topics in my book. And so again, you've got to take it as a big picture, you know, just you can take a slice of it and then take it out of context and it doesn't look like it's connected to anything.
Right. Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And so I didn't release this book until I could integrate all of it. And the DNA molecule is a fantastic living creature. It's an incredible substance, if it can be called that, because it's the interface between physical and spiritual reality. Our DNA does not die when we die, it crystallizes. It's a liquid crystal, a living substance that shifts dimensionally into this fifth dimensional area of light.
Wow.
In physics, the fifth dimension is light. People mystically talk about the fourth dimension, but really what I'm talking about is going to the center of our cells, and that is the DNA molecule, and the DNA molecule is something that cannot be seen by the naked eye, right? We need an electron microscope.
That's right.
Well, that's because it's in another dimension of space, in the light realm, in the electromagnetic, you know, from infrared to ultraviolet. It's in that ultraviolet range.
Mm-hmm.
But this is interesting. It's also interfacing with the zero-point field, and we're enmeshed in that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's incredible.
Mm-hmm. I know I've heard the idea that we are going from two strands of DNA to 12, and I'm sure you've done some research on that one too, haven't you?
I've looked at that, and it doesn't, in all honesty, add up to the physics that I understand. Because I'll say this very clearly: if you were to shift to 12 strand DNA, whatever that means, I can I can see it theoretically, but you would not no longer be a human being.
Huh.
Two strands of DNA is all you need. We're a bipolar north-south pole magnet, see? We need two, everything, male, female, right? Left, right. Everything is polarized in two opposites, mirror image opposites.
That's right.
If you had 12 strands of DNA, you would look like an octopus.
I apologize for breaking in here. What a powerful show. Again, Zany, you always outdo yourself with your interviews. You bring on phenomenal people. I am just listening, but we have had a caller, and I didn't know whether you wanted to take calls during this hour.
Fine. It's up to Dr. Harper.
Absolutely. Let's talk with our friend.
Because this isn't the normal time we run. We're just pre-recording live, and so there are there was a caller. I put them on, but then I guess they hung up.
Well, if there's another call that comes through, just let us know.
You got it. Now, Dr. Harper, here's a question for you, and it's something that I get through my own process of thinking, let's say. And it's a question that I've never had answered, and I don't know, but it feels correct to me, and that's about speed and energy, the dimensions, and how it all works. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean, If it's really about vibration, isn't it also about speed?
Yes, up to a certain point. And
can you elaborate? Yeah,
light,
no.
You know, once you experience the speed of light, for example, in physics, I mean, if that was theoretically possible, I say it is. then everything is happening instantaneously.
Correct.
Right? And folks who have near-death experiences confirm this over and over again. There is no time, but only because they're in a timeless realm
right.
where everything's happening at the speed of light.
Well, is it because the speed, like let's say you take the Creator as a unified force and it's all one.
Yeah.
That means everything connects to itself instantly. But if you put the filters in place and you slow the speed of that curve down, then you get into a solid and gas phase.
That's correct.
And once
phase
that,
shift.
Right, and once that happens, that light then it's slowed to a point that in the physicality, it travels a certain distance, and that creates the time, because now you have distance, you have time, because it's no longer connecting instantaneously, it
right.
has a
that
filter.
Dimensionality, so in the unified field of physics of Einstein, the theory of relativity, you would have space-time is one something.
Correct.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
yes.
because when you... If you do speed something up towards the speed of light, then the mass goes to infinity.
Well, then that takes it to the next step.
Okay.
See, then that would lead me to this conclusion, and that would be that you're really increasing your vibration by lowering your wavelength. And once you cross that boundary, you've hit a certain speed or instantaneous connection, let's call it, whatever you want to call it.
Transformation or phase shift
right.
into the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm. Right. Or, and I would also, then if it is that, if it is a case of that, then these, let's call them extra terrestrials or ultra or extra dimensionals,
yeah. Yeah.
many of those would just be moving at a faster rate, so fast, in fact, that to us they're invisible. And they can do things. They're connecting with a potential that they're really more fully aware, but they can do a lot much quicker because it's really about a speed.
That's right. You've got the idea. And I'll give you an example. When
and,
I fly a small aircraft and I point the nose of my, say my Cessna into the sun, I lose the prop. I can't see.
Right.
Right?
Well, then that means the last conclusion would mean that we're refining ourselves. And as we refine ourselves, then we're really getting down to an ohm-like quality of sound or energy or wavelength. So our wavelength would go lower, but longer, and which is increasing your vibration, and, or in other words, you're just refining it to the point of that silent sound.
That's right, and that's what, because the human cell is a liquid crystal semiconductor, you need to run more electricity through it in order to change that phase shift.
Yes, you see, I'm not getting this anywhere but through my own meditations, and I keep thinking
wrong.
It's loopier than heck.
No, don't short-circuit yourself now. You just tapped into the mother lode.
Well, I get meditations, they're strange ones, but...
You'll integrate all of them, trust me on that.
Yes.
It'll all come forward.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Absolutely marvelous. I'll let you continue to the interview. Thank you for letting me speak on the air, Zany. We love you.
It's a pleasure. you know, we were talking about near-death experiences, and one of the most moving ones, which I think is mentioned in some of your work, is a Mellon Thomas Benedict. And you spent quite a few years, I think 15 or more, interviewing people who have had near-death experiences. Is there a commonality between them, and what do they describe?
Well, there's a great commonality, and there's a great, scale from the low end of barely getting into this multidimensional space, and then having full-blown cosmic consciousness run through every cell in your body, and that is where you might say is the spectrum of the near-death experience.
Uh-huh.
One thing that Mellon Thomas Benedict brought back from his profound 90-minute-plus death experience, he was clinically dead and confirmed so by a hospice caretaker. Mellon and I, let's see, we started talking back, oh gosh, maybe 14, 15 years ago, and he blessed me by, he would call me here and at my residence, and we would have some marvelous conversations. Then he actually came here to my hometown, and we did a body, mind, spirit conference
Wow.
together. This was many years ago, but Mellon right now is involved in medical research and all types of energetic type phenomenon because he can see into the DNA molecule.
Really?
And see, Mellon was one of the first people that I know of that coined the word liquid crystal for DNA because he said he saw when he died that the information and energy that is inside this physical caterpillar cocoon that we live in at the moment downloaded into another body, his energetic body or astral body, spiritual body, however we want to phrase this.
Right.
But that information was DNA downloading and crystallizing, reforming itself into a new body. And so, as he'll say, he says, this body goes way back to the Big Bang because, you know, it's just a continuation. Reincarnation is just, you know, throwing the snake skin down and picking the new snake skin up, if we will. And so, and he came back with the ability to go into this fifth dimensional space in trance. And I guess he went all over the world, in fact, and was funded to do so and talk with shamans of every ilk all over the planet. And so he came back with this tremendous insight on how to integrate this knowledge and use it for creating marvelous devices that can bless mankind. And so he has like six U.S. patents, I understand, on various medical technologies.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's awesome, yeah. When someone comes back, and of course, I mean, you hear all kinds of stories, and when you get into the political arena and the business world, and then you get all kinds of things going on, you know.
There has been some suppression going on, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I mean, people get their feelings hurt, and it's still that ego is still, you know, alive and unwell here on planet Earth.
Right.
And so... Without, you know, so the idea here, though, with a near-death experience is to understand, again, we're trying to be taught a lesson about the opening of the third eye is imminent. When a species like ours gets to this point of maturity, where it's basically meeting most of its energy needs, its a living environment, its habitat, if you will, is optimal, almost. We keep polluting it, but we'll get that, you know, cleaned up here in the next decade or two. But the thing of it is that we need to go green now so that we can open our third eye and do it in a more smooth way. And so these near-deathers, though, we need to listen to these folks. I mean, they've had these profound experiences. It usually takes them about 7 years to integrate this knowledge so they can get on with their lives here, you know, on terra firma again. And I can relate to that because, like I say, when my third eye opened and I had these experiences, I was like floating down the street most of the time. You know, my feet did not touch the ground on most days, and I was just trying to interact with some very top-level military officers and senior scientists, and I have to bottle that stuff up, and then just when I walk out the gate of the installation, just explode. You know, you know, get me back to my books, get me back to something that I can relate to, because. You know, that's one of the things, Lance, that you find is that you see people are going through the motions as almost as robots.
Yeah,
And they're not getting any good vibes going yet. And so they're really just mired down in the mud of the day-to-day grind. And you understand that. And you have compassion there for everyone. You look at another person, you say, those are my soulmates because they're holding up consciousness. They're units of consciousness. They're upright, walking on two legs for the most part, and they are trying their best to survive in this body that is weighting them down, but it's necessary.
Yeah.
See, because the body is the unconscious mind. Listen to that. Candace Pert, biochemist, who wrote a beautiful book called Molecules of Emotion.
Yeah.
Right? Great. Remember her?
Yeah, she's
okay.
Wonderful.
That's one of her coined phrases.
Huh.
The body is the unconscious mind.
Oh, I like
and
that.
It is. Yeah. Because once the body becomes fully conscious, it turns back into light.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, a lot of channels and other people talk about the light body. And
yes.
So maybe this is part of, you know, we're all seeing the same thing. We just have different tints on our glasses, I think.
What we're talking about is the 97% that we call junk DNA is turned off. When we turn that puppy back on through DMT, through the pineal pituitary complex valve system, we're going to light up like Christmas trees, if you'll pardon the expression.
How can we go about doing that?
Well, again, we want, there's theory and then there's application of this knowledge. In my own life, what I try to do is eat organically as possible. But I do it through enzymes and powders and stuff, vegetables that have been ground real fine. And there's a lot of those products out there, and everyone needs to experiment for their own body chemistry. And there's no right solution to this. You know, get good water in you. I just built a sauna in my home, and I'm going. That's my sweat lodge, if you will. You know, I'm a three-piece suit shaman.
I love it. That's great.
With plastic in my wallet, you know what I mean.
That's wonderful.
So the idea then is to keep your system healthy and to keep your mind looking up as well as around. I mean, most of us go through life looking down at the ground. I'm not even sure how we ever saw our first UFO.
No.
I mean, unless it came out of the dirt.
That's funny. Well, you know, I think that if there is a shift that's going on as well that's turning us away from materialism, which seems to be a much heavier, denser vibration. And I think this this brings us into the idea of earth changes.
Mm-hmm.
And that it seems like we're almost going to need to have some kind of earth changes and some kind of financial meltdown before people will start waking up.
Well, it's happening now, but it's also kind of a blessing because, you know, right now probably our worst enemy is not weapons of mass destruction, it's weapons of mass manufacturing.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And when we talk about materialism, don't let anybody think that I don't enjoy the fruits of my labor and have my plasma screen TV and my theater surround sound.
Right.
Okay, you try to come back, we're going to have some trouble. You know what I mean? Okay? Don't take that from me. But seriously, on this topic, what we really need to be about, look, go into a store, Lance, you know, and I know you've done this. Look down the aisle. I mean, do we really need 47 different types of cans and packaging and, you know, I mean, maybe we could get together and those companies could come together and share their profits and we could only have maybe the best five, you know, buy for our consumer dollar.
Yes. Yeah.
See, that's the thing right now. We're really out here. We're spread out too thin. We're not collectively using our wisdom yet.
No. And there's an awful lot of greed and manipulation that's going on.
There's the ego.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, let go my ego.
Yeah. Good one. What about the idea, we haven't touched on this much, and I don't usually get into it, but we're talking about near-death experiences and so on and so forth. I've heard people talking about the Elohim lately, the angels, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about the G word, the God word. What is your interpretation on that energy?
From what I've experienced in my life and from what I have researched and confirmed from the lives of others who have died, had mystical experiences, kundalini openings, shamanic experiences, drug experiences, you know, looking at a lily on a pond and having their minds blown, you know, wide open from that alone, from the sunlight reflecting off of their third eye.
Yeah.
All of it's of one piece and one fabric. And what it is that we are the extensions of this divine being we call God. Okay. We're like we send probes to other planets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God sent us here, okay? And he's trying to get communication reestablished because he's lost control of the robots, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so that's what this 2012 is about. That's what, you know, in the book of Revelation, it talks about the opening of the seven seals. Well, that's the seven chakras. And so it talks about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, and that represents the north, south, east, west axis that the procession of the equinoxes go around. So we have winter solstices, you know, and we have equinoxes, autumnal equinoxes, a word meaning equal in Latin. But the point is that all the sacred literature is talking about end times where all of it comes together. The wisdom comes up, the earth changes dramatically because it's recorrecting this tilt situation on the planet electromagnetically. Remember, we're an magnetic gyroscope, and so everything is hinged on our relationship to the sun and then the sun behind the sun, which is the center of the Milky Way that the Mayans called Hunab-Ku, or God.
Mm.
So when we talk about God, we have to talk about energy. If you don't see the light, you're not ever going to get enlightened. And because we are all out here spread out like so many light bulbs with a dimmer switch turned to down, we need to get connected. And then when you get a healthy body, mind, and spirit here and now, we're going to light up literally, you know, like a big halogen bulb.
Like a Christmas tree.
Like a Christmas tree. And I just got to throw this out, Lance. I'm sitting here looking at in my office at a Christmas tree in the corner window, and the lights are blinking and it's beautiful. And don't we realize that that tree, that Christ mass tree, is representative of the north-south axis of the earth, and that Santa Claus, who represents guarding the North Pole axis, and the ancients also knew that when you left the body, you would go into the electromagnetic field around the earth, and the idea was to know that you need to exit through the North Pole, and that would get you oriented in the right direction. And listen to this. I've talked to near-death experiences, experiencers who have literally been fully conscious during this escape velocity experience from the earth, and they were rocketing towards the constellation Orion. And there, once they were there, they were actually shown by some very divine light beings in a temple complex that reminded them of old Egypt. That one particular lady of light, as my friend calls her now, showed him a replica of the earth, and then showed it the axis tilting, and looked at him and telepathically communicated the thought, this is going to happen to your earth. And when he came back here, he started looking at all this. He had many, many trips to Egypt and to the sacred sites around the world. Wonderful person himself. But the point is, we need to realize that everything means something if you understand the symbolic representation of that particular image. Okay? And that's the other thing. We look at people that are fighting over religious symbols, and yet they're all saying the same thing. You know?
Seems pretty silly, huh?
Very silly and very tragic.
Yes, it's sad.
It's sad because, you know, we could turn this into a huge Garden of Eden and have a wonderful garden party. You know?
Well, maybe we will, and, you know.
We're going to do it.
I mean, it sure seems like it's either going to go that way or it's going to go in another direction.
It's going to go a little of both.
Maybe we're going to be splitting our directions into to other realms. But what about quantum physics?
In terms of?
In terms of, you know, what we're connecting with spirituality. You know, they're finding that there's bilocation and there's...
teleportation.
Yes, and there's all kind of spooky action at a distance.
Yeah, it's all part of it. The next level of consciousness takes you into that quantum realm. And so that's why that's so important to understand. And in fact, I'll give you a little hint for everyone that maybe is like in chapter one of life and not up at, you know, reading in the appendices like some of us are now. But, you know, the one of the great ideas that came to me and has been confirmed over and over again is that when I look at technology, I realize we're being taught a lesson at every level. For example, you know, nuclear technology can be used for nuclear medicine as well as nuclear weapons, right? There's nothing wrong about trying to fix a sick human body. I mean, you know, this is good stuff. I mean, we got all these wonderful saints here. I call them, they're really angels, these nurses and doctors that, you know, go all over the world and treat third world countries and even in our own inner cities. And I mean, just think if we didn't have those types of folks ministering to us, what a mess it would be, you know? And so this idea that we're energy bodies will come into fruition, and there'll be devices that you'll probably walk through and realign your entire frequency, the spectrum. And this is something Daniel Brinkley, speaking of near-deathers, Daniel Brinkley was shown this would be the case in fact. And Mellon Thomas Bennett, again, he works with light-emitting diodes, LED, real small frequency, infrared level spectrum devices, because it takes very little energy to trigger a spontaneous remission from cancer, for example. So you clean up the system, and that's it, nature will start working with you. The body wants to live because it's the unconscious mind trying to become conscious. So that survival instinct that we have is it. I mean, we need to work with it. We got to work with nature now, not against nature. Understand who we are, where we've been and where we're going, and then we can just, you know, get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what Larry the Cable Guy says, get her done.
Well, it seems like you would also be a proponent for reducing or eliminating things like addictions and smoking and alcohol that's causing some kind of damage to the body. Would that be correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And what's going on there, of course, though, is that these are all self-medicating ways trying to live another day.
Yeah.
I mean, they're coping mechanisms that are backfiring on us.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But I mean, when you look around at smokestacks back in the, you know, 1890s to early 1900s, and you see a worker leaning against one smoking, I mean, my God, what a mirror. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, that's right.
You know? So the monkeys on the planet have been going wild for a long time, but the 100th monkey effect is kicking in now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if one person says their third eye is open, then listen to them. I mean, if the person is just Looney Tunes,
mm-hmm.
okay, then go, well, so what? I mean, his third eye open, it doesn't look like it helped him much,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you see someone inventing things, if you see somebody healing others, if you see somebody that can communicate this clearly,
mm-hmm.
then listen up.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Right? Because they're trying to say, you know, hey, you don't have to do it this way. You know, you're making your life so hard that you're getting depressed and you're getting stressed and you're getting sick.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And if we look around at each other and realize there's only one DNA molecule and everybody has only one DNA molecule replicated trillions of times in them. And so this DNA molecule is reconfigured through 20 amino acids, but there's only one DNA for the human being.
Hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere you look, that's you. That's an extension of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
All the great avatars said this, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you see me, you see God,
mm-hmm.
they said, some of them.
And what we do to another person, we're doing to
ourselves.
Yeah.
If you give a cup of water, Jesus said, to that stranger, you're giving it to me. And that's a quantum consciousness saying that to
us. Absolutely. You know, that's why wars and arguments and fights just don't make any sense.
They sure don't, and they're counterproductive because they're destroying the units of consciousness and energy that we each are, that we need to go into global consciousness, to third eye opening collective cosmic consciousness. And so we're like taking two steps forward at times and three backwards.
Yeah.
You know, just think if we all locked step and walked into this new millennium together.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, energetically I'm talking about, just not touchy feely stuff. I'm talking about literally shared our everything with other third world countries. Let's, you know, break everything down to its basics around energy. Remember, we're about ready to fight energy wars.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the reason is we're energy beings. We're all light beings. We need these products, we think, to keep these economies going. What we really need to do is give everybody hot and cold running water and good hygiene and bring their health up.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And, you know, it's really disappointing to hear that there are some globalists that are, you know, talking in think tanks and so on that are at the top of the levels of the elites that are talking about reducing population by millions, if not billions. You know, there are some that are proponents of, you know, secretly eliminating, you know, 5 billion people from the planet because they think that's the problem.
Yeah, it's really not, overpopulation is not the problem. What's the problem is we're not sharing the resources because we don't see that, you know, we are the other. We don't see that we need to be our brother's keeper because we're all in this brother sisterhood together.
That's right.
And we're one global human being with one DNA molecule. I keep preaching that sermon over and over again, and one day someone's going to get it.
Yeah. Well, that might be the 100th monkey theory coming into play, too.
That's it, Lance.
You know, maybe somebody listening to this radio show.
Could be.
You know, on Coast to Coast when you're on next week.
Yeah, Sunday night with Art Bell for your listeners that want to tune in there.
Oh, wonderful.
11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with Art Bell for 3 hours.
Oh, that's wonderful. I just love Art Bell.
Oh, yeah, isn't he fantastic?
Too.
My God. He started all this. Isn't he the king of talk radio? You know?
Absolutely.
You bet.
Absolutely. You gotta give him that.
Yeah.
But so do you think that there's going to be some kind of telepathic shift, too, which you mentioned earlier?
Yes.
That would be the end of politics.
Well, what it's going to be is that you really don't need to judge anyone anymore. You'll have discernment. In other words, no one's going to be able to lie to you without you discerning that that's not the truth.
Yeah.
Well, and that'll change. And some people, by the way, I mean, I know that some of us have some very grandiose ideas what it must be like to be enlightened and have your third eye open, but I can tell you, you can be a real rascal and still have some of these powers.
Ah.
See, that's why the avatars and some of the old gurus and stuff, you know, they were really tuned into this idea that someone needs to be morally straight, mm-hmm. you know, first.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would share some of their, you know, third eye opening techniques. For example, you know, I mean, you know, one of the classics in Asian philosophy is, you know, what do you do before you become enlightened? You chop wood and carry water.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do after you're enlightened? Chop wood and carry water. Why? I thought we're supposed to just blow up in a big light bulb kind of experience and go off to another galaxy. No, this Earth is our Earth.
Yeah.
This is our space in this particular galaxy,
mm-hmm.
and it is a gift from God.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is the Garden of Eden that we turned into a toxic waste dump.
Yep.
And now we got to take all that organic matter and reconfigure this compost pile that we've created.
That's right.
And grow beautiful light beings out of it.
Yep.
We need to bring the energy of the Earth back up. I mean, the sun is doing this, the galaxy is doing this, but we, for example, we need more trees.
Yeah.
We need more green.
Yeah. And we're chopping down the rainforest.
And that's the lungs of the Earth and our lungs.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
no coincidence that our children have asthma.
Yeah.
And we're chopping and burning and slashing everything that's green.
Yeah.
Right?
It's almost like a death wish.
It is that exact thing that Sigmund Freud talked about in his own way when he talked about a death wish. That's right. And we see this in terrorism, for example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These are folks that have no hope and no vision and no future, and they're going to make damn sure that we don't either.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not evil beings. They're mm-hmm. just, they're not enlightened.
Right.
They're these microbes that are like flesh-eating bacteria. Right?
Yes.
Okay, and so we can see, and that's going to open up a whole other show maybe for us, is, you know, pandemics are going to be coming, unfortunately, part of this weaning process, this pruning and purification cycle that we're in, simply because if you don't really know this stuff and apply it, you know, your immune system takes the hit from the stress even more so than it does now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like the Great Depression, for example, of 100 years ago. I mean, I can imagine, you know, we had the great flu outbreak in 1916, 17, you know, right after World War I.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, you know, polio and tuberculosis coming in right there after the Depression in the 30s and on up. Why? Because these pandemics get a foothold in a society that's stressed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we got to integrate this back into a whole kind of recipe for success here if we're going to make it, you know, to 2012 and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to ask you about the what you foresee in the coming year, say 2007, in terms of, you know, shifts and things. A lot of people are talking about 2007 as being the turning point.
I think it's probably very close to being that pivot, 2007, 2008.
Uh-huh.
You know, time is relative.
Well, yes, exactly.
In a sense, in other words, I mean, if you set the master reset button
right.
on the clock, I mean, you know, and then you start relating to what? I mean,
right.
Who's in charge of the reset button? Well, I can tell you, the sun and the core of the Milky Way is our system clock, and that's what the ancients were doing with this, with their sacred site monuments. When they're looking at particular star systems, when they're looking at particular energetic events on the sun.
Yeah.
And so when we say 2007, 8, it's coming, folks. I mean, you know, if everything's wonderful next year, I'll be the first one to say thank you, God.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
That's a safe bet. Okay. But what are we going in right now? I just looked this morning at NASA and some of the data that's coming off the satellites and their sensors in terms of these massive X-class solar flares that have been happening this week.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask you about that. What's going on?
Well, that's part of it. Those are the timing pulses. That's what you need to pay attention to. So don't look at the clock on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Tune into spaceweather.com, for example.
Mm.
and get into their loop, and then you'll see when these flares hit, and then look around at the world. I mean, maybe 2 or 3 days before, 2 or 3 days after that radiation pours down, look at what happens. You'll start sensing, as I do, you'll have great moments. In fact, you'll just think that everything's going to turn out wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then 2 or 3 days later, you go, oh my God, are we going to live another day?
Yeah.
And that ups and downs is an energetic bipolar, literal, north-south polar electromagnetic field change or phase shift. Huh. And so that's what's coming. When we say 2007, 2008, we're leading up to 2012. Why 2012, for example? I mean, why not 2011, 2014? Well, some of us now use the term era 2012. And I like that too. You know, it's a window. 2012 is, you know, if you don't know where you're going, there's no sense setting any date.
Right, right.
So I think the Mayan calendar aspect and the work of John Major Jenkins is marvelous. I mean, that kind of stuff and folks like him that have a deep sense of this, you know, and some are, you know, predicting, you know, cataclysmic things, and John Major Jenkins is not. I mean, he's very grounded about this, and he thinks very much along the lines I do. I'm certain on this that this is about kundalini rising and about the opening of the chakras and the third eye vision, that type of thing. In fact, he wrote a book called Pyramid of Fire that even says that. It's based on an old codex, an old manuscript that someone gave to him years ago that he's, translated from the Mayan.
Uh-huh.
But here's the point. 2007, 8, 9, 10, in people that I've talked with near-death experiences are very consistent on this point, that in this era, between the Venus transits of our sun, which there's a Venus transit in June of 2004, there'll be another one in June 2012, between those two events, those 8-year events of Venus, were what all the ancients understood as the window of transformation of this planet. Every time that occurred with these grand cycles based on the 26,000-year, give or take, precession of the equinoxes, and what's going on now is cycles within cycles within cycles are converging, and that's why this is so significant. If you take any of the things isolated, you say, well, this will be a minor event coming up. No, I'm afraid not. The evidence is in. Many of us have sifted through it. The verdict is here and now, and we're going through a major transformation in consciousness and civilization. And we need to prepare for it by being aware of it, primarily, and then taking certain precautions like you would for any natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But again, 2007, 2008, 9, and 10, there'll be electromagnetic, solar-related, energetic events. When you see, for example, another tsunami that will come, and you realize that the oceans are packed full of undersea volcanoes, they're from the last data I saw that was done by the oceanographers, I heard a ridiculous number. There might be 1 million volcanoes underneath our ocean.
Really?
On the ocean floor.
Wow.
And we know that when the molten core of the earth gets an energetic charge to it, it bursts up into the ocean floor and erupts those volcanic vents. And from that, you literally can boil the oceans if enough of them went off.
Wow.
And this is, and in mythology, they say this has happened.
Wow.
But here's the thing. The earth is a living being. If we can accept that premise at some level that the earth is consciousness and that we're tapped into that consciousness and we're an integral part of it. We're a probe out here walking on the surface of the planet, constantly beaming back health and biological data information back to the electromagnetic field that we're surrounded in, then we can say, okay, so maybe it won't be as bad as it was before because maybe we have more consciousness available to stabilize the feedback loop, and therefore the Earth will know how to stabilize in a way that won't be so destructive. That is my belief.
Mm.
That's why I spend time doing what we're doing here.
So so we can kind of help people understand, do you feel that the individual then actually does make all the difference?
An individual, is a subset of a larger organic being called a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And the human being is part of the large, you know, there's a greater set to that, and that's the Gaia, the mother goddess, Earth. And there's a larger being even to that that we need to be aware of, and that's the sun. The sun is our solar body. Mm-hmm. So what we're saying about our chakras aligned and our third eye opening and all this metaphysical mumbo-jumbo, as it is to many scientists, it's not to me, but, you know, I get the woo-woo effect a lot, you know, fed back to me. Mainly the family.
Oh.
No, they're all tuned into this stuff too, really.
That's great.
Oh, I got 8 grandkids, but they never, you know, Papa is still Papa, so, you know.
Wow.
But the point here is that we're part of this larger solar body. Mm. And, you know, in ancient mythology, the avatars were always worshipped as sun gods.
Yes, yes.
And Jesus was linked to the morning star, Venus. Remember what I said about the Venus transits between 2004 and 2012?
Yeah.
Listen up. This is all part of the puzzle. And what we're doing here is when we're becoming enlightened, we're actually tapping the solar wind. We're actually tapping the fields of light, the sunshine. Fifth dimension. Remember this group, the fifth dimension, let the sunshine
in.
Right? We're in the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Well, Aquarius, of course, is water. So how is the transformation coming about? It's coming about through the shifts at the core of the Earth through the ocean. So we're seeing super oceanic storms, or as I say, SOS. You know?
Yeah, that's good.
And what we're doing is shifting the electromagnetic fields at the level of the molecules of water, of H2O. And so it's kind of purifying itself through these super storms. It's literally recycling all this water so that we're getting ready for a high-energy event. And, you know, we drink this water. I mean, mm-hmm. There's really so much water. It's evaporated in that cycle of evaporation, precipitation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sunlight. That water is sunlight filtering down. You know, like in Seattle, my native hometown as a child, you know, we had days and days of liquid sunshine.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So we need to listen to these metaphors, listen to these cute little stories. And they're all telling us about who we are, where we've been, and where we're going. It's just that, you know, we got the mute button on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the third eye is closed.
Mm-hmm.
So our five senses have had to do the whole heavy lifting of consciousness in terms of survival. But once you can get tuned into the larger field of consciousness, you go, oh, there's a solution. Oh, there's a solution. My God, there's 10 solutions to that problem right over there.
Right.
See?
And it's easy. It's not like,
yes.
Not like lifting weights and, you know,
no.
When we rely on our senses, it's like lifting weights.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
We've
been doing the heavy lifting for so long. We forgot that there's, you know, once we're in shape, there's something we need to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we can run that spiritual marathon now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, will you tell people how they can reach your website and more about how they can get your book as well? And you had a special offer as well, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, you know, Lance at his website, too, has got a special offer from my publisher, Reality Press. So you need to go check that out, too, at bbsradio.com, Fireside Chat menu option button. But I'm located on the internet at John J, that's J-A-Y, Harper, H-A-R-P-E-R.com. So my full name, JohnJHarper.com.
Mm.
And at that website, there's a lot of free stuff. I've got a lot of very good articles. I've got a free download on the bird flu, preparing for a pandemic that's applicable for any type of viral, problem. I think it's written by an MD, and it's a marvelous guide, about 20 pages in a PDF format. But there's a lot of stuff there now. My webmaster, Doug Christopher, is doing a marvelous job, and I can't say enough thanks to him because he works long hours and way into the early morning when we do shows like this to give, you know, listeners something special to go to the website and look at all that stuff. So that's how to do it. I'm right there at johnjharper.com, and swing by and grab your cup of green tea and sit down and take a look.
Well, I highly recommend it. I ordered your book, and unfortunately, I didn't get to read it before our interview. It's going to be a treat for me to, you know, now that we've spoken, to go back and say, oh, yes, this is what he was into, this, and make connections, because you have it.
Well, you know, it's interesting that, you know, I say this humbly, I'm getting tremendous reviews in England and Australia and et cetera. And this is exciting, of course, for anybody, you know, anyone that, those of us that like to create art or music or literature, at some level, you know, this is great. But the feedback keeps us going because it's really not the money, you know.
Right, right.
You know, the money is such a secondary thing. You're going to do this anyway. You can do it in poverty. You can do it with the lights on, you know.
Exactly.
Right. So the other thing, though, that I want to bring out is that I've got a DVD that's being finalized right now in London, England. My producer director, Philip Garner, is doing a marvelous job, and we did the studio work here a couple weeks ago, and but all the visual and the music is coming from a lot of great bands with realityentertainment.com. My publisher's got a big parent organization, a major record label, Reality Entertainment, but the point is this new DVD is a match set with a book. If you see the video, you might come back and get the book, but you really need the book to really get the most out of the video.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be titled Science of Soul, The End Time Solar Cycle of Chaos in 2012 AD. And if you go to my website, johnjharper.com, at the very bottom, you'll see the image of Science of Soul DVD. And if you push on that click to preview Hot Link, it'll take you to a several-minute preview of it. You'll be able to see several minutes of it, just the opening, but it'll get more and more, so check back. We'll keep adding more and more to that video as it comes out of the studio. So anyway, just that's enough of my plug.
No, wonderful. I mean, I can't. You have been so terrific. I mean, I hope everybody checks out your website, gets your book, and I'm going to get the DVD myself. So it looks like we're just about out of time. Is there anything, last words for the audience before we go?
Well, first, I've enjoyed this tremendously, and I feel, you know, obviously I'm passionate about this message. I really want to see us get our act together. I really want to see these problems turn into solutions.
Absolutely.
And everyone tap their creativity, you know, keep thinking creatively.
Absolutely.
There is a solution to your problem. And then the problems become challenges that you enjoy because you know you're going to solve them.
Yes.
Right?
Yep, exactly.
And the key, again, though, is meditation. The key is to understand that you can shift your consciousness in a way that's healthy and life-promoting, and that's where we're headed. So hang on, keep on, let's keep doing what we're doing, but doing it better and wiser.
Yep.
And the bottom line is, be nice to one another, be kind.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, Dr. Harper, I'll tell you, this has been one of the most exciting interviews that I've had so far, and I really enjoy and thank you for joining us today. And I hope that you can come back sometime soon.
I'm here when you need me, Lance. Thanks
a
lot.
Oh, wonderful. I wish you the very best. And thanks again for being here.
God bless everyone.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.